All right, my friends, halfway home on a Wednesday. Ben and Woods, 97.3, The Fan. Phenomenal to be here with you this morning. Looks like it's shaping up to be a very beautiful day outside. We are very, very lucky. We know that. I'm Woodsy. That's Paul Reindel, the executive producer. Ben Higgins, your friendly neighborhood sports anchor, joins us as well. And I got a very special guest joining the program.
Yeah, you got a busy hour coming up. Don't forget, 8:35, Nick Hundley is going to be with us, former Padres catcher, now special assistant for the Texas Rangers. But right now, it is always a pleasure to welcome our Odyssey colleague, Odyssey MLB insider Brett Boone. Insider calls are presented by Grainger with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Brett, also the host of the Brett Boone podcast, which we were just talking about, featuring notable names in MLB and more every single week.
Now, I wonder if he gets grief like we get grief when we do the more. You know, like how we like stick to sports. Shut up. Right? Does Brett Boone get the same stuff? Do they just want baseball content from you, Brett?
This isn't Lou Piniella.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, you just had on your podcast a dude I love, John Ashton. He played Taggart in Beverly Hills Cop. He's been in a bunch of stuff, man. So many movies. Long storied Hollywood career. And I love that. I like to see you going outside the box there.
You know, you got to do it once in a while, don't you, Woodsy? I mean, you go with Taggart. Who knows who's going to be maybe the San Diego Chicken tomorrow? We don't know.
You do never know. How was John? I'm gonna go listen to that that podcast, because we were just all talking about how much we love the original Beverly Hills Cop. They got the new one coming out today on Netflix. I will 100% stop down and watch that at some point this weekend.
Yeah, John is great. I've known John for a lot of years. I remember I was a rookie in the big leagues, and we were in Minnesota. And they were shooting this movie, and I think Randy Johnson at the time and Griffey had bit roles, and it was that the movie Little Big League.
Little Big League, excellent movie.
Johnny was the bench coach.
Yep.
And I remember, you know, I'm just a kid, and I'm just, you know, I'm trying. I don't know whether I'm coming or going, but we got this big Hollywood set, and I'm, you know, I see Taggart, and I'm like, oh, that's Taggart. So I started calling him Taggart. He's like, well, no, my name's John.
Pretty good punch you got there, Taggart.
We went out on the town, and then, you know, got to know him a little bit. Years later, I was in San Diego, and I come into the – we're coming to play the Padres. I'm with the Reds, and I walk through the bar, and, you know, the team bus just got there. I'm walking through the bar to get to my room. There's Taggart with all the boys, and they're shooting a movie. I said, listen, let me go put my stuff down. I'll come back down, you know, I'll have a drink, and we'll catch up. And I get down there. He's like, yeah, we're shooting a movie I think they were shooting in Mission Bay. And the producer wants to know, Boone, if we get 7 tickets tomorrow.
7.
And I said, well, here's the deal. Let's negotiate a little bit. I said, I need a role in this movie you're producing. And he said, well, what do you want to do? I said, I just want something stupid. I said, but I need it. And here's what I need. When I get to the set, I need a trailer. I don't care how small it is. I need my name outside the trailer. I need a star next to my name. And sure enough, next day, I go down to Mission Bay.
You're kidding.
I got this trailer. It's as big as a shoebox. It's got my name written in Sharpie, and there's a star on it. I said, hey, we negotiated. I got what I wanted. I played a cop. I had the vinyl uniform that cops wear. And I had this terrible role, but it was fun. I got to see how it works. I drove this old cop car down the street, and, you know, Johnny was the star. He got out. He was the undercover cop. He had the cool clothes on. You know, I've got this linen 1976 cop outfit on, but that's where our relationship goes back to. Great guy.
What movie?
He's over the top excited about this. I think it's one of those went straight to video. It's called Fast Money.
Fast Money,
starring Brett Boone.
I'm all over.
And I'll tell you what, you'd have to.
It's streaming somewhere. It's got to be.
You'd have to rewind it and rewind it again to find out that is Booney in the cop car.
That's unbelievable.
Crazy.
Man.
I just pulled it up. Yeah. When a car thief can't resist stealing one more car, she finds herself in possession of $2.7 million mob money and the mob's counterfeit printing plates.
Brett Boone, the cop.
1996.
Check it out. I'm in the clown. There's a clown scene. Just Google clown scene, and I'm the guy driving
the cop car.
Oh, it's a clown.
Crazy.
I'm all over it.
So as long as we're on the topic, What is your favorite baseball movie? And
like
Big Leaguers.
Yeah,
what are they really like when it comes to baseball movies? Because we always have this discussion.
Well, I don't know if I'm more cynical than your normal big leaguer, but baseball movies drive me crazy.
So yes, you are.
Hypersensitive. I just look at it and I go, that's not how it really is. You know, these producers, what do? Oh, let's just put tobacco in everybody's mouth and have them spit, you know, really awkwardly because they're actors and they've never had tobacco in their mouth. And that's what ball players do, right? Oh, it drives me nuts.
The ghosts don't come out of the corn. That's not how it works.
Oh, it drives me crazy. Okay, if I'm going to be honest, the most accurate portrayal of a baseball movie I've seen by far is Bull Durham, as far as how the minor leagues actually are, with a few caveats. There's one scene where they pull in, and then he says, hey, you guys want to rain out tomorrow? And they go there in the evening, and they flood the valley.
Yeah, right.
It doesn't happen, because you never get to a minor league city the night before, because they're not going to whip out for the hotel room. So you're always getting there in the morning. You never get to a minor league city. So that pissed me off, all right? So other than that, though, I thought it was pretty good. I thought Costner, you know what bothers me more than anything? The way that the actors move as athletes.
Yeah,
it's not a real move. They don't move correctly. So that bothers me.
Yeah, Tim Robbins can't throw a baseball.
Dennis Haysbert as Serrano in Major League had a pretty decent power swing.
Well, and Sheen looked like he knew how to pitch.
Yeah, he did. He did. But you know what? You either got to go, you got to look exactly the part, or you got to go Tim Robbins. You got to go Robbins on me, which is, it's so unbelievable that it's funny because it's so far the other way. So I'm going to go with either or. I thought Costner did a pretty good job. I thought he walked all right. I thought he moved pretty good. Swing wasn't bad at all. So I'm going to give it a thumbs up. Bull Durham, I thought was well done. But if you're going to go my favorite movie, it's the Bad News Bears, without a doubt.
So good.
Nothing's even close. Mathau. In his day, I love Bad News Bears and Breaking Training, too. So those are my top three.
Oh, I love that. Talking to Brett Boone here on Ben and Woods this morning. And you have been busy. I was just looking at your Twitter. So you were just on in Dallas talking about the Rangers last night with the fan there, RJ Choppy and his group. And now you're on talking about the Padres. I said this morning, Booney, that last night's game was kind of one of those where, man, I was talking about that nobody likes a loss. If you're a fan of a team, you hate all losses.
Right.
But there's some that you're like, all right, I'll wear that one. That's fine. Last night was just, you know, I appreciate a good pitching performance as well as anybody. But, man, just a two-hit shutout. It's just so painful to watch. And the San Diego Padres just kind of look like they never got off the plane. Yeah, happened certainly. But definitely not a fun. Nah, kind of what we're not used to that from this team lately.
No, and you know, Cease had a rough night, and but anytime you get one of those number one stopper type starters in Eovaldi, that can happen, and you just chalk it up to that was just one night, bad night. Let's go get them tomorrow. I'm really impressed with this Padres team's doing, especially with they've been really banged up lately. I mean, Camposano, he's coming back. Bogarts, I heard, is doing a rehab this week. You know, Tatis is not going to be back till after the break, and the two huge ones. Or Musgrove and Darvish. You know, Darvish out much longer than we thought he was going to be. He goes out with the leg injury, and now there's inflammation in his elbow. Musgrove, you know, they're talking possibly August now. So the fact that you've held serve and are really playing some of the best baseball they've played, winning seven out of their last 10, I think the Padres in the position they're in the playoffs right now, as it stands, if it were over today, with all the injuries and everything going on with the Padres right now, be playing the way they are and be in the playoff hunt, I think is a testament to them and their resilience. You know, they're starting to trend up. They're in top categories, all the offensive categories. Need to pitch a little bit better, but getting Musgrove and Darvish, that's huge. I think this Padre team, at the break, I think you're going to have to go out because of that, because of the Musgrove, and it's touchy. And now they're finding, you know, a bone chip. I think you're going to need another pitcher. I think you're going to have to go out there and get another pitcher. I love the bullpen. I love how it sets up to get to Suarez. But I think you're going to have to get a pitcher. I think this Padre team is a playoff team. And I was just talking, you mentioned the Atlanta or the Texas show I was just on, I've been thinking a lot about it in the game today and the 162 and how it used to be versus 2024, where it's not that marathon it used to be. You know, we used to finish that 162, and if you won the division, it was a big sigh, like, wow, what a grind, and we're standing right now. Today, it's not like that. There's so many injuries in the game today, and injuries play such a big role in streaks that teams go on, or teams have a losing streak or a winning streak because a couple of their big guys are out. Injuries are playing a bigger role than they've ever played in our game. And I think what you do is it's all about positioning yourself, getting a seat at the table, not necessarily the division where it used to be, hey, we got to win that division. Yeah, as a player, you're always going to have that mindset of, no, we're going to win the division and we're going to get home field advantage. But it's all about getting a seat at that table and trying to get your roster in the right spot going into the postseason, because that's what's important now. And there's so many landmines in the postseason. You got to go through so many rounds just to get to the World Series. So I don't think it's about necessarily the best team you're going to see going forward winning that World Series. It's who positioned themselves at the right time, who stayed healthy, and who got on a run is going to be your World Series champion going forward. And not the old days where that guy that was standing at the top of the hill at the end of 162 usually went on and won that World Series. I don't think that's going to be the case anymore. It's just getting a seat at the table and getting the right time.
Talking to Odyssey MLB insider Brett Boone. Again, insider calls presented by Grainger, with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Brett, I wanted to ask you about Bruce Bochy, manager of the Rangers now. Obviously, you played for him. I know you love Bochy because everybody loves Bochy. I love Bochy. I love covering him, everything about him. But what is it? Because Bruce Bochy has had a bunch of bad seasons in his managerial career. This one, I don't know how it's going to turn out, but obviously the Rangers have gotten off to a really slow start. But when he's had those chances with the Giants, with the Rangers, even taking the Padres to the World Series, he always seems to get the most out of the teams that do have those opportunities, the ones that are there. What is it about Bochy and about good managers that just that little bit extra that they get the most out of their best teams
than everybody else? I hate Bochy. I don't like him. He's not a good guy. No, he is. Okay. What I want to say first is the manager can only do so much, and that's obvious. You know, I year in and year out, I see it. Oh, that manager's not doing good. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't make the right. That's nonsense. Once the national anthem ends, there's only so much you can do. You can get the lefty up, get the righty up, whatever. Handle the media. A computer can do that. The great managers, I think, are people. They manage people. They're like a great CEO. Doesn't mean everybody's got to love you. Doesn't mean everybody's got to hate you. You have a knack. You have a way about you. You got that it factor where you get the best out of your players. You put your players in the best position to succeed. Bochy is a little beyond that for me. He's a great manager, but he's got that factor where, you know, I always think as a manager, you've got to separate yourself from the players. And usually that's via bench coach, who is kind of the go-between the manager and the players. I think as a bench coach, you're the player's buddy. Everybody's your friend. You know, you get intel. You go around. You make sure everybody's feeling okay. And you can have that closer relationship with the player. As a manager, I always thought you got to distance yourself a little bit because he's going to be making big decisions. He's going to piss you off at some point in the season. Who knows? He might be the one that has to tell you you're going to AAA. He might have to be the one telling you we traded you. So I think there's a buffer in between. Bochy, different than anyone I ever played for. He had a real close relationship with the players, which I thought was kind of taboo, but it worked for him. He's just a special, special guy that, you know, you mentioned Ben, that nobody has anything bad to say about Bochy. There's only a handful of people I've come across in my career where that's the case. And it is the case. I don't think everybody says everybody loves him. Well, truly everybody that has ever met Bruce Bochy, I really haven't ever heard a negative word about him. He's a great manager. He's a baseball manager, knowledgeable man. He was a backup catcher, so he knows the grind of a season. It didn't come easy to him, so he has that perspective. But he's also got a fatherly, best friend, grandfather type appeal to people where you just love him. He's kind of like a Dusty Baker. You know, everybody loves Dusty. He's just got that way about him, and he has that ability to also be close with the players, but still be their disciplinary guy and still be a guy. I think it, because everybody that comes in contact with him, they just have that level of respect kind of above and beyond. So he's that unicorn, I think, when it comes to managers. He's last of that probably old school breed that we grew up watching. And he's just a special, special man. And I really can't put my finger on why he's able to do that. But he's been the one manager that I play for. That man, I could play for. I could go 0-for-4 with a couple punch outs, make an error in a big situation. And after the game, he was my buddy for some reason. And he didn't make it an awkward feeling. It's a special thing that he was born with that not too many people have.
Booney, always appreciate it. We thank you so much for making time and so much that you have throughout the season. We will chat with you again coming up after the holidays.
You got it.
Thanks, brother.
Red Bone, always our insider calls presented by Grainger. Supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. We got to take a quick timeout. Can we talk a little bit more about Boach when we come back? Just because I thought Brett Boone had some interesting insight there. Got Nick Hundley at the bottom of the hour as well, so you don't want to miss any of that.
You can ask him about Boach, too.
Absolutely. Another guy who played for Boach. Another catcher who played for Boach there as
works
well.
Works with him now.
And works with the Rangers at the moment. So we'll get to all that after Kelly's traffic here on 97.3 The Fan. Baseball coverage on 97.3 The Fan is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile. You can get tons of benefits, still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find how at T-Mobile.com/switch. Our thanks again to Brett Boone, our Odyssey insider. And I was fascinated with him talking about what separates Bruce Bochy. So question for you. Boch has 26 full seasons under his belt as a big league manager. This is his 27th year. Do you think Boach has more winning seasons or losing seasons as a manager?
Well, because you're asking me, I'm going to say losing.
You know me pretty well.
I know you very
well. It's actually 13-13.
Okay.
He's got 13 winning seasons, 13 losing seasons, and an overall record. He's about 15 games under 500 in his entire career, like 2,130-something wins, 2,140-something losses.
Yeah, he was here for a
but
while.
But he also had a bunch of losing seasons. He won 3 World Series titles. He also had 7 losing seasons in San Francisco.
Wow.
It's not just the time with the Padres. Boach is an undoubted Hall of Famer, right? I mean,
slam dunk. First
when he
ballot,
retires,
yeah,
he is going to the Hall of Fame as a manager in baseball. No one has any question about that.
None.
He has a losing record, and if they don't turn it around this year, he's going to have more losing seasons than winning seasons. And this is the cream of the crop. This is the best, you know, of the best. This is a guy who will be talked about with Joe Torre and some of the legendary managers of baseball, the guys who have done it better than anyone. And even he can't overcome rosters that don't have enough talent, injuries, whatever. And you are always saying you put it on the players more than the manager. Is that not the perfect example that even Bruce Bochy, the guy that everyone in baseball admires, respects, agrees is a Hall of Famer, has 3 World Series, or 4 World Series rings now, he still doesn't even have a winning record in this game because it's that hard to do it, especially if you don't have the players.
Yeah, I mean, it's that's why, yeah, you're right. That's why I do always kind of put it on the players. And really, the GM, of course, gets a lot of credit, takes a lot of the blame for the players that, you know, you can only get so much out of guys. And, you know, you look at a guy like Kevin Cash, and I think he's a really good manager as well. Never had a high payroll to work with. You wonder, would Kevin Cash, if you stuck him in New York managing the Mets, would he be as good? Would he be the same? Bob Melvin was so good with those young, talented Oakland A's teams. He gets here, there's the open, you know, checkbook, doesn't actually do that great. Gets us further than we've gone in a while, but ran out of pitching then too, and you know it, how much credit should he get? How much blame should he get? The person that's always quickest to blame the manager or the hitting coach, I've always looked at that person and said, man, a hitting coach, it can only take you so far. A manager can only take you so far. You have to execute. You know, you do. And personal responsibility is really quite a thing in the game of baseball.
I mean, I look at Boch's career, and he's truly only had probably about seven really good teams.
Yeah.
And he turned four of those into World Series titles. He turned one of them into a World Series appearance with the Padres in 98. The other ones, I would say 96 Padres were really good. Obviously, they lost right away in the playoffs. I think the 2006 Padres, his last season, they won 88 games, but lost that stupid series to St. Louis to start the playoffs. And they had another decent Giants team in 2016, but 87 wins. And then the Rangers won that he just had.
Yeah.
The rest of them, he's had tons of mediocre teams that just weren't that good.
Yeah.
But when he had the chance, he got the most out of him in October.
So he's what, 4-for-5 in the World Series? Is that right?
He's 4-for-5 in the World Series. Yeah. And in the playoffs, he's only 9 playoff appearances in 26 years.
Wow, man.
But four of them ended in World Series titles.
That's the dream right there. And yeah, I mean, and if you asked him, if you gave him truth serum, like, what do you do differently? He'd be like, I don't know.
That run in San Francisco
was nuts,
will
dude.
Boggle my mind maybe forever.
Yeah.
I was living, my college roommates were all from the Bay Area.
Yeah.
Massive Giants fans. And just the fact that they would win the World Series, miss the playoffs.
Yes.
Win the World Series, terrible year. Win the World, like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
And now it's kind of happening in Texas.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Could the exact same thing could happen.
Might miss the playoffs.
You know, I've always gotten the sense of, I've known a lot of, you know a lot of but people that played for him, know a lot of people that have worked with him, met him a couple times, I've heard a million stories about him. You get the sense, though, he's not, when Booney compared him to Dusty Baker, I don't think the comparison was like they're the same type of manager. They have the same type of stature, but Dusty Baker's a high energy at the end, chewing on the toothpick, ready to go. Boch is like, all right, whatever. Just says, and it's almost, you look at him and go, what do you do? He's just chill. Like, he's just a chill guy. Like, he's not a high energy pacing back and forth. Like, let's go. He's not a rah-rah guy. Just guys, for whatever reason.
I'd say you can go get him.
So, yeah, he's just a guy you want to play for.
He does what the greatest leaders do. He makes you feel disappointed if you don't come through for him.
Yes, dude. Yes.
Not through anything he really does. It's just like, I don't want to let Boch down.
100%.
Because I like him so much.
Yeah.
And that's all he really has to do.
That's exactly
he's
right.
He's there, and it's like, everyone else just decides, I better play well because Boch is here.
I mean, bro, you think about, like, what would he have done with the Padres of the last couple of years? I don't know. I mean, I thought Bob Melvin was the absolute solution. Hands off, players manager, let them do it. Brilliant psychologist.
Probably
brilliant,
nothing different.
Brilliant community. Yeah, nothing.
I don't think that would have been much different.
I don't think so either.
Well, we got another guy who played for Boch, and Nick Hundley is going to join us. He's also a special assistant to Chris Young, the GM of the Texas Rangers. We'll catch up with Hundley when we return with Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan. Said last night on Channel 10 that the Texas Rangers haven't exactly looked like defending World Series champions this year until last night.
Last night they very much looked
like the defending World Series champions. They did it without Corey Seager. They did it with a great pitching performance by Nathan Eovaldi, and they just beat up on Dylan Cease. We've got Nick Hundley standing by. He's special assistant to Chris Young, former Padres catcher, going to join us right after this check of traffic on 97.3 The Fam. Yeah, I've told you, Woods, that in my now, 25, almost 30 years covering the Padres, there have been certain players that I've always been kind of nervous about approaching for interviews and in the clubhouse. Our next guest is not one of them. I always enjoyed conversations with Nick Hundley. He just was really friendly. He's just more approachable than most. And I want to say thank you to Nick. I appreciated that when he was a player. And now he's joining us right now here on Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan. Hi, Nick. How are you?
Hey, what's up, guys? I hope I don't blow that cred with this interview. It's
I have no worries. You're gonna be just fine.
How about when you were playing, Nick? What was the worst thing that media did? Like, what was the worst question that they asked you? Was it the, hey, what were you looking for on that pitch? Or was it the, tell us about your approach there? Because I watch those, and it still happens, like, on a regular basis. And I'm just like, well, obviously, he's looking for a pitch to hit, something to drive, you know, out of the ballpark, and look for a pitch to hit and drive something out of the ballpark, I guess, right?
Yeah, it'd be tough, because there was times when you'd play you know, early in the series, you'd be playing the Dodgers, and you're playing the Dodgers next week, and then you're playing them 18 more times. They're like, hey, what were you looking for against Chad Billingsley? He's like, well, I'm going to face Chad Billingsley four or five more times this year, so I'm not going to answer that truthfully.
I'm not going to tell you anything. Yeah. No, Ben, certainly, we have gone through the people that Ben was scared of. Andy Ashby was probably at the top of the list for some reason. He's like the nicest like dude ever, but Ben was terrified of him, but he always said, yeah, you were really,
kind of
really...
He had a sneer after the games that just kind of was off-putting. I don't know.
He's great. Some guys, look, man, some guys get it, and some guys don't. Some guys get the job, and some guys don't want to be bothered by, you know, slappies like us in there.
Nah, it's definitely part of the job for sure. So you know what you're signing up for.
So tell me about the job right now with the Texas Rangers and working with CY as general manager. Obviously, last year was just an unbelievably magical season. But what would you say? What are you kind of doing, and what's your role right now with the Rangers?
Yeah, right now it's a lot of draft stuff. I'll be with the team in Anaheim and then go back to Dallas for the draft and, you know, just work through some of the catchers that we're looking at, some of the amateur guys. I've probably seen about 8 to 10 guys live and just kind of in our little pocket. And, you know, I really enjoy that side of it now with how important the draft is. You look at, you know, you can look at what the Padres are doing with Jackson Merrill, and then that same draft class, they draft James Wood and Gasser, and all of a sudden you look up and you've, you know, got a guy who's potentially the rookie of the year and two guys you traded for generational talent. So it's pretty fun month of July. So with the draft and the trade deadline. So this is really, really busy for me, and then just give my opinion and then head back to San Diego.
Yeah, it's kind of the best of both worlds, I would imagine, for an ex-player with a family. Talking to Nick Hundley here on Ben and Woods this morning. You know, I ran into you over at the play structure, and we were talking about that. And, you know, I can't imagine, like, for Boach, I know it was hard for him. He was like, I don't know if I'm ready to go back and do this everyday grind. I can't imagine having to, like, be with the team every day when you got a young family at home. And I think this feels like, for you, a really, really good fit.
Yeah, I'm fortunate, you know, and even the guys in Dallas too. Chris does a really good job of fostering community and fostering the importance of family. I mean, he has three awesome kids. He loves his family, loves to be around them. You know, hires guys like Boach and Will Venable and things like that foster the love that they have for their families too, and build that community that way. So to be able to be a dad and still be involved and have a voice and be able to give my opinion and connect with CY and the rest of our front office group. That's been amazing. So I'm very thankful the last 2 years to be able to do this for sure.
Do you think this is Chris Young's calling as general manager? I always thought he might be the next commissioner of baseball.
Us, yeah, we all did.
Someday as well, after working in the office. He may be too, you know, even-minded and for that job at this role. But tell me just a little more about CY and what you think of him and what his future is in store.
Oh, I think CY can do whatever he wants to do. You know, I think he's proven that in the short time, going from the league office to running a team to win a World Series in a short time. And obviously he's not the only one involved. There's a lot of foundation laid by John Daniels and the group in front of him. But Chris is just a different type of leader. He can connect with people in A-ball. He can connect with ownership. He can connect with people doing ticket sales, security guards. He just has a real respect for people and serves people really well and has high standards. So, I mean, I can tell you stories for days about playing with Chris and the standards that he had in getting himself ready, and the standards that he had for his teammates and getting them ready, and what he needed out of people around him, what he needed out of me catching him. I learned a lot. I was really, really fortunate coming up with guys like Trevor Hoffman and Greg Maddux and CY and David Eckstein and those types of guys that showed me how to prepare and actually be a big leaguer and what an actual day looked like in the big leagues before the game and after the game. And he was the top of that list. So I learned more about preparing to play a Major League Baseball game from Chris Young than anybody, which is pretty interesting to say, because as a starting pitcher, that's not usually the case.
That's pretty incredible stuff. Talking to Nick Hundley here on Ben and Woods this morning. And, you know, the I kind of, at the beginning of the year, we do the normal sports radio thing. And, all right, where do you think everybody's going to finish? And I had the Rangers, you know, the hangover, the World Series hangover, certainly real. And Ben was going over some of the numbers yesterday before the series started and said, I really can't put my finger on why they haven't played as well as maybe they should have.
He's not getting on base.
He's not getting on base right now. But, man, you got some good young talent. Wyatt Langford's one of my favorite players to watch. I watched him hit for the cycle the other night. I'm like, what an absolute beast he is. And Corey Seager, of course, I mean, gold standard type player, World Series MVP, an absolute force. Adolis Garcia, I love. My kids love him. Like, what a good team that you guys have put together. Just hasn't materialized yet. And there, I think there's still plenty of time to turn it around. But what have you kind of seen?
Yeah, I think all of those things are true. I think, you know, we've been banged up. I think Josh Young has played four games for us, and the way that he was, I mean, starting the All-Star game last year, he would have probably been, I would say, probably won the Rookie of the Year if he didn't break his thumb last year. Obviously, Gunnar Henderson's an amazing player too, so nothing to take away from him, but I would have voted for him if he was able to stay healthy. So he's an absolute all-star star in this game. Not having Evan Carter, who burst on the scene. Another talking about draft coming up, yep. The second round pick from the Rangers a couple years ago. And then, you know, having a little bit of underperformance at times, guys fluctuating a little bit. There was about a month period where kind of everybody wasn't hitting on all cylinders, which, you know, it happens sporadically through the year, but when it's a concentrated point where a lot of guys aren't, makes it a little tougher to win. But, you know, the way that we've been taking at bats the last couple weeks has been a lot more in line with who we are, and that's really encouraging. Like, you look at the game last night, you know, Dylan Cease throwing 98 with two really good breaking balls, and we were able to not expand and take pitches at the margins and win those pitches and get in good counts. And you know, thankfully we did some damage on some mistakes, but you only do that if you take those marginal pitches. And for a guy who strikes out 200 guys a year, to take those marginal pitches against is really, really tough. So that was an encouraging sign.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun for us too, Nick, yeah, watching that game.
First one,
super fun.
That first marginal pitch to Nathaniel was strike three.
Yes, it was,
marginal,
man.
Pitch.
Come
but
on.
Whatever, it's fine.
You still got a score to win,
I don't
though.
Know why he threw him that change up after that. That's all right. We don't need to relitigate yesterday's game. We're talking to Nick Hundley, Rangers special assistant, former Padre. And you mentioned doing some scouting now of young catchers. You were obviously a top young catching prospect, a second round draft pick when you came out. And I don't know how much film you've seen, but I was wondering if you had any perspective from outside the Padres organization on Ethan Salas, someone who we keep hearing about, and you know, they just talk about what amazing skills he's got for a 17-year-old kid, you know, playing in high A, went to double A for a little while last year, but kind of struggling offensively, maybe expected. What's the talk around the league about Ethan Salas?
Yeah, he's impressive. You know, actually, one of our Brett Bochy is working with the Rangers now as a scout, and he covers a lot of the West Coast. So I talk to him a lot. And then, you know, I know Riley Westman for a long time, a couple of years now. Talking to him about Ethan too. He can really, really catch and really throw. And the thing that I love, you know, the thing that I love about catchers, I love watching their pace and their heart rates. And when there's big situations, I was fortunate to play with Buster Posey for 2 years. I feel like I saw the game speed up on him one time in 2 years. Like, his just heart rate, and he just played with this pace where he just dominated the game, because it's such a tough game, and it'll speed up on everybody. But when you have a catcher who's in a leadership position, who's in big spots, and their heart rate is low, it's such an incredible trait to have. And I think that's what Jonah Heim has, our catcher in Texas, Gold Glover, and, you know, started the All-Star game last year. His pace and his heart rate is so good that when you're in the World Series and the bases are loaded and Aroldis Chapman's throwing two, like, if I'm catching in that situation, my heart rate is really high.
Through the roof.
And I might be chasing it back to the backstop. But Jonah's not. Buster's not. And it looks like the pace that Ethan Salas plays at, it looks like for me as watching him, like he's not going to be chasing that ball either. Like he's going to control that game. So all the skills and all that stuff aside, all the youth playing at a higher level above his age, all that stuff aside, I just really like the pace that he plays with.
That's such good information. Talking to Nick Hundley here. Last one for me. I mean, you see it a lot on Twitter, and you see it a lot. You hear it a lot, and people are, I don't understand why these catchers now. You know, the catching position has changed, certainly, and there's a new way that's being taught. You know, the glove down, you kind of steal one. And we watched Ethan do it brilliantly when we were at spring training. I could have watched him do catching drills all day, but the position has changed, Nick. It changed from when I was a kid, you know what I mean? And how have you, as a catcher, former catcher, adapted to maybe teaching a little bit a different way to do it?
Yeah, how much time do you have?
we got about 5 minutes left.
Yeah. I mean, so let's start off when umpires weren't graded as hard. Right now with the Z system, like these umpires are graded so difficultly. They get every single pitch. And a lot of them, I mean, we can go into a tangent on ABS and all that stuff too, but umpires have gotten so good at calling balls and strikes with the system that they're graded. Some guys are shooting 98%, 99%, 100%. So when I came up, if you would move the ball, umpires would ding you like crazy. Yep. Like, hey, don't do that. It makes me look bad. Catch the ball, hold it so I can see it. Like, if you would move the ball at all, like, you'd get crushed by umpires. And when I came up, like, Greg Maddux told me when I came up, don't move. Like, if you set the target up and you move it, it's like me standing over a ball ready to, like, on a tee and ready to tee off and, like, in my backswing, you yelling at me. So don't, like, literally don't move. So I was like a statue. I was like, oh my gosh, can I even breathe? Like, this is a Hall of Famer. I don't want to get sent down tomorrow. Like, please like throwing to me, you know? So now that the umpires are graded so heavily, like you can move the ball as much as you want and they can't hold that against you, right? So your goal as a catcher is to make the ball that's 2 inches below the zone look exactly the same as the ball that's 1 inch above the zone. So I'm going to catch it the exact same way. I'm going to try to pull it up the exact same way. So these small margins, when Dylan Cease is throwing 89 mile an hour sliders and 98 mile an hour fastballs, like these small marginal pitches, I want to make those look exactly the same. And then probably talking through one knee down stances like that. Guys are throwing so hard now that the sliders, the splits, like Nate Evaldi last night was throwing 89 mile an hour splits, 93 mile an hour cutters. Like if I'm in a traditional stance where I'm don't have one knee down, I'm playing higher. The level that I play at is a lot higher than if I have one knee down. So it's a lot easier to block. All the blocking metrics when it first came out, it was like, well, how are you going to block in a one knee down stance? And all the blocking metrics and pass ball metrics are so much better now than they were when most guys went traditional stances. Just because you're playing lower to the ground, you're playing, you don't have to exert as much effort to block that ball, to receive the low pitch, things like that. And we have an amazing catching coach in Bobby Wilson who is one of the leaders at that and teaching the one knee down stance. One, umpiring, two, velocity, and then three, just longevity and health. I think it's a lot easier on your body to be in that position as opposed to being in a traditional squat for such a long period of time throughout the season. So there's a lot of positive things about it. Like any revolution that takes place, there's going to be a lot of pushback and a lot of traditional lists will say, oh, that doesn't look right. That's not the way to do it. But at the end of the day, like, I like flat screen TVs. I like replay. I like planes. Like, I like all those things. Like, let's continue to advance, you know?
Yeah, I like advancements as well. That was amazing.
Great stuff. We could probably continue on if we had more time. We don't, but promise you'll come and do this again with us real soon. Maybe in studio at some point when you're in town.
Yeah, I'll sneak in. Yeah, I'll pop in there with you guys.
That'd be awesome, man. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
All right, Nick Hundley, I got some stuff to react to on that when we come back. Final hour of Ben and Woods. Get a round of report ahead as well. Don't go away. More on the way here on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. Said last night on Channel 10 that the Texas Rangers haven't exactly looked like defending World Series champions this year until last night.
Last night they very much looked like
the defending World Series champions. They did it without Corey Seager. They did it with a great pitching performance by Nathan Eovaldi, and they just beat up on Dylan Cease. We've got Nick Hundley standing by. He's special assistant to Chris Young, former Padres catcher, going to join us right after this check of traffic on 97.3 The Fam. Yeah, I've told you, Woods, that in my now, 25, almost 30 years covering the Padres, there have been certain players that I've always been kind of nervous about approaching for interviews and in the clubhouse. Our next guest is not one of them. I always enjoyed conversations with Nick Hundley. He just was really friendly. He's just more approachable than most. And I want to say thank you to Nick. I appreciated that when he was a player. And now he's joining us right now here on Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan. Hi, Nick. How are you?
Hey, what's up, guys? I hope I don't blow that cred with this interview.
It's I have no worries. You're gonna be just fine.
When you were playing, Nick? What was the worst thing that media did? Like, what was the worst question that they asked you? Was it the, hey, what were you looking for on that pitch, or was it the, tell us about your approach there? Because I watched those, and it still happens, like on a regular basis, and I'm just like, well, obviously he's looking for a pitch to hit, something to drive, you know, out of the ballpark, and look for a pitch to hit and drive something out of the ballpark, I guess, right?
Yeah, it'd be tough because there was times when you'd play, you know, early in the series, you'd be playing the Dodgers, and you're playing the Dodgers next week, and then you're playing them 18 more times. They're like, hey, what were you looking at for against Chad Billingsley? He's like, well, I'm going to face Chad Billingsley four or five more times this year, so I'm not going to answer that truthfully.
I'm not going to tell you anything. Yeah. Ben, certainly, we have gone through the people that Ben was scared of. Andy Ashby was probably at the top of the list for some reason. He's like the nicest dude ever, but Ben was terrified of him, but he always said, yeah, you were really,
he
really
had a sneer after the games that just kind of was off-putting.
He's great. Some guys, look, man, some guys get it, and some guys don't. Some guys get the job, and some guys don't want to be bothered by, you know, slappies like us in there.
Nah, it's definitely part of the job for sure. So you know what you're signing up for.
So tell me about the job right now with the Texas Rangers and working with CY as general manager. Obviously, last year was just an unbelievably magical season. But what would you say? What are you kind of doing, and what's your role right now with the Rangers?
Yeah, right now it's a lot of draft stuff. I'll be with a team in Anaheim and then go back to Dallas for the draft and, you know, just work through some of the catchers that we're looking at, some of the amateur guys. I've probably seen about 8 to 10 guys live and just kind of in our little pocket. And, you know, I really enjoy that side of it now with how important the draft is. You can look at what the Padres are doing with Jackson Merrill, and then that same draft class, they draft James Wood and Gasser, and all of a sudden you look up and you've, you know, got a guy who's potentially the rookie of the year and two guys you traded for generational talent. So it's pretty fun month of July. So with the draft and the trade deadline, so this is really, really busy for me, and then just give my opinion and then head back to San Diego.
Yeah, it's kind of the best of both worlds, I would imagine, for an ex-player with a family. Talking to Nick Hundley here on Ben and Woods this morning. You know, I ran into you over at the play structure, and we were talking about that. And, you know, I can't imagine, like, for Boach, I know it was hard for him. He was like, I don't know if I'm ready to go back and do this everyday grind. I can't imagine having to, like, be with the team every day when you got a young family at home. And I think this feels like, for you, a really, really good fit.
Yeah, I'm fortunate, you know, and even the guys in Dallas too. Chris does a really good job of fostering community and fostering the importance of family. I mean, he has three awesome kids. He loves his family, loves to be around them. You know, hires guys like Boach and Will Venable and things like that foster the love that they have for their families too, and build that community that way. So to be able to be a dad and still be involved and have a voice and be able to give my opinion and connect with CY and the rest of our front office group. That's been amazing. So I'm very thankful the last 2 years to be able to do this, for sure.
Do you think this is Chris Young's calling as general manager? I always thought he might be the next commissioner of baseball.
Us, yeah, we all did.
Someday as well, after working in the office. He may be too, even-minded and for that job at this role. But tell me just a little more about CY and what you think of him and what his future is in store.
Oh, I think CY can do whatever he wants to do. You know, I think he's proven that in the short time, going from the league office to running a team to win a World Series in a short time. And obviously he's not the only one involved. There's a lot of foundation laid by John Daniels and the group in front of him. But Chris is just a different type of leader. He can connect with people in A-ball. He can connect with ownership. He can connect with people doing ticket sales, security guards. He just has a real respect for people and serves people really well and has high standards. So, I mean, I can tell you stories for days about playing with Chris and the standards that he had in getting himself ready, and the standards that he had for his teammates and getting them ready, and what he needed out of people around him, what he needed out of me catching him. I learned a lot. I was really, really fortunate coming up with guys like Trevor Hoffman and Greg Maddux and CY and David Eckstein and those types of guys that showed me how to prepare and actually be a big leaguer and what an actual day looked like in the big leagues before the game and after the game. And he was the top of that list. So I learned more about preparing to play a Major League Baseball game from Chris Young than anybody, which is pretty interesting to say, because as a starting pitcher, that's not usually the case.
That's pretty incredible stuff. Talking to Nick Hundley here on Ben and Woods this morning. And, you know, I kind of, at the beginning of the year, we do the normal sports radio thing. And, all right, where do you think everybody's going to finish? And I had the Rangers, the hangover, the World Series hangover, certainly real. And Ben was going over some of the numbers yesterday before the series started and said, I really can't put my finger on why they haven't played as well as maybe they should have.
He's not getting on base.
He's not getting on base right now, but man, you got some good young talent. Wyatt Langford's one of my favorite players to watch. I watched him hit for the cycle the other night. I'm like, what an absolute beast he is. And Corey Seager, of course, I mean, gold standard type player, World Series MVP, an absolute force. Adolis Garcia, I love. My kids love him. Like, what a good team that you guys have put together. Just hasn't materialized yet. And I think there's still plenty of time to turn it around, but what have you kind of seen?
Yeah, I think all of those things are true. I think, we've been banged up. I think Josh Young has played four games for us. And the way that he was, I mean, starting the All-Star game last year, he would have probably been, I would say he probably won the Rookie of the Year if he didn't break his thumb last year. Obviously, Gunnar Henderson is an amazing player too. So nothing, to take away from him, but I would have voted for him if he was able to stay healthy. So he's an absolute all-star star in this game. Not having Evan Carter, who burst on the scene. Another talking about draft coming up, yep. A second round pick from the Rangers a couple years ago. And then, you know, having a little bit of underperformance at times, guys fluctuating a little bit. It was about a month period where kind of everybody wasn't hitting on all cylinders, which, you know, it happens sporadically through the year, but when it's a concentrated point where a lot of guys aren't, makes it a little tougher to win. But, you know, the way that we've been taking at bats the last couple weeks has been a lot more in line with who we are. And that's really encouraging. Like, you look at the game last night, you know, Dylan Cease throwing 98 with two really good breaking balls, and we were able to not expand and take pitches at the margins and win those pitches and get in good counts. Thankfully we did some damage on some mistakes, but you only do that if you take those marginal pitches. And for a guy who strikes out 200 guys a year, to take those marginal pitches against, is really, really tough. So that was an encouraging sign.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun for us, too, Nick, yeah, watching that game.
First one,
super fun.
That first marginal pitch to Nathaniel was strike three.
Yes, it was,
marginal
man.
Pitch.
Come
but
on.
Whatever, it's fine.
You still got a score to win,
I don't
though.
Know why he threw him that change up after that. That's all right. We don't need to relitigate yesterday's game. We're talking to Nick Hundley, Rangers special assistant, former Padre. And you mentioned doing some scouting now of young catchers. You were obviously a top young catching prospect, a second round draft pick when you came out. And I don't know how much film you've seen, but I was wondering if you had any perspective from outside the Padres organization on Ethan Salas, someone who we keep hearing about, and you know, they just talk about what amazing skills he's got for a 17-year-old kid, you know, playing in high A, went to double A for a little while last year, but kind of struggling offensively, maybe expected. What's the talk around the league about Ethan Salas?
Yeah, he's impressive. You know, actually, one of our Brett Bochy is working with the Rangers now as a scout, and he covers a lot of the West Coast, so I talk to him a lot. And then, you know, I know Riley Westman for a long time, a couple of years now. I'm talking to him about Ethan too. He can really, really catch and really throw. And the thing that I love, you know, the thing that I love about catchers, I love watching their pace and their heart rates. And when there's big situations, I was fortunate to play with Buster Posey for 2 years. I feel like I saw the game speed up on him one time in 2 years. Like, his just heart rate, and he just played with his pace where he just dominated the game, because it's such a tough game and it'll speed up on everybody. But when you have a catcher who's in a leadership position, who's in big spots, and their heart rate is low, it's such an incredible trait to have. And I think that's what Jonah Heim has, our catcher in Texas, Gold Glover, and, you know, started the All-Star game last year. His pace and his heart rate is so good that when you're in the World Series and the bases are loaded and Aroldis Chapman's throwing two, like, if I'm catching in that situation, my heart rate is really high. And I might be chasing it back to the backstop. But Jonah's not, Buster's not, and it looks like the pace that Ethan Salas plays at, it looks like, for me, as watching him, like, he's not going to be chasing that ball either. Like, he's going to control that game. So all the skills and all that stuff aside, all the youth playing at a higher level above his age, all that stuff aside, I just really like the pace that he plays with.
That's such good information. Talking to Nick Hundley here. Last one for me. I mean, you see it a lot on Twitter, and you see it a lot. You hear it a lot, and you know, people are, I don't understand why these catchers now. You know, the catching position has changed, certainly, and there's there's a new way that's being taught. You know, the glove down, the kind of steal one. And we watched Ethan do it brilliantly when we were at spring training. I could have watched him do catching drills all day, but the position has changed, Nick. It changed from when I was a kid, you know what I mean? And how have you, as a catcher, former catcher, adapted to maybe teaching a little bit a different way to do it?
Yeah, how much time do you have?
We got about 5 minutes left.
Yeah, I mean, so we'll start up when umpires weren't graded as hard. Right now with the Z system, like, these umpires are graded so difficultly. They get every single pitch. And a lot of them, I mean, we can go into a tangent on ABS and all that stuff too, but umpires have gotten so good at calling balls and strikes with the system that they're graded. Some guys are shooting 98%, 99%, 100%. So when I came up, if you would move the ball, umpires would ding you like crazy. Yep. Like, hey, don't do that. It makes me look bad. Catch the ball, hold it so I can see it. Like, if you would move the ball at all, like, you'd get crushed by umpires. And when I came up, like, Greg Maddux told me when I came up, don't move. Like, if you set the target up and you move it, it's like me standing over a ball ready to, like, on a tee and ready to tee off, and, like, in my backswing, you yelling at me. So literally don't move. So I was like a statue. I was like, oh my gosh, can I even breathe? Like, this is a Hall of Famer. I don't want to get sent down tomorrow. Like, please like throwing to me, you know? So now that the umpires are graded so heavily, like, you can move the ball as much as you want and they can't hold that against you, right? So your goal as a catcher is to make the ball that's 2 inches below the zone look exactly the same as the ball that's 1 inch above the zone. So I'm going to catch it the exact same way. I'm going to pull it up the exact, I'm going to try to pull it up the exact same way. So these small margins, when Dylan Cease is throwing 89 mile an hour sliders and 98 mile an hour fastballs, like these small marginal pitches, I want to make those look exactly the same. And then probably talking through one knee down stances like that. Guys are throwing so hard now that the sliders, the splits, like Evo, Nate Evaldi last night was throwing 89 mile an hour splits, 93 mile an hour cutters. Like if I'm in a traditional stance where I'm don't have one knee down, I'm playing higher. The level that I play at is a lot higher than if I have one knee down. So it's a lot easier to block. All the blocking metrics when it first came out, it was like, well, how are you going to block in a one knee down stance? And all the blocking metrics and pass ball metrics are so much better now than they were when most guys went traditional stances. Just because you're playing lower to the ground, you're playing, you don't have to exert as much effort to block that ball, to receive the low pitch, things like that. And we have an amazing catching coach in Bobby Wilson, who is one of the leaders at that and teaching the one knee down stance. So one, umpiring, two, velocity, and then three, just longevity and health. I think it's a lot easier on your body to be in that position as opposed to being in a traditional squat for such a long period of time throughout the season. So there's a lot of positive things about it. Like any revolution that takes place, there's going to be a lot of pushback, and a lot of traditional lists will say, oh, that doesn't look right, that's not the way to do it. But at the end of the day, like, I like flat screen TVs, I like replay, I like planes, like, I like all those things. Like, let's yes. continue to advance, you know?
Yeah, I like advancements as well. That Nick, was amazing
great, great stuff. We could probably continue on if we had more time. We don't, but promise you'll come and do this again with us real soon. Maybe in studio at some point when you're in town.
Yeah, I'll think of it. Yeah, I'll pop in there with you guys.
That'd be awesome, man. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
All right, Nick Hundley, I got some stuff to react to on that when we come back. Final hour of Ben and Woods. Get a round of report ahead as well. Don't go away. More on the way here on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan.